Welcome to Update One, the podcast of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Update One provides a forum for listeners to learn about national stories focusing on news, politics, and current events. Now, the latest edition of Update One.
I'm Adam Cano, and joining me today to discuss law enforcement training for use of force situations is Gary Harris of Meggett Training Systems. The Georgia-based company is a supplier of weapons training systems for military, law enforcement, federal, and commercial applications. Gary, thanks for joining me today on Update One.
Thanks for having me.
Can you explain a little bit about what comprises the potential lethal use of force and how common it is in American law enforcement today?
The deadly force policies, they vary in language slightly depending on the agency, but in general, when an officer reasonably believes it's necessary to defend themselves or the life of another, or to prevent gravely bodily harm to themselves or to another, and all the available means of defense fail, and or those other means would be inadequate or dangerous under the circumstances, then that person, that officer, can apply deadly force to resolve the situation. Now, it's extremely rare, even though we've seen a lot of reporting in the news about situations involving police officers and deadly force lately, but it is still rare. There are approximately 600,000 sworn officers nationwide, and so far this year, there have been approximately 558 fatalities resulting in the application of deadly force by a police officer. And if you do the math, that's 0.093% of that sworn force that's involved so far this year that's been involved in a situation that resulted in the application of deadly force. So it's still very, very rare.
Yeah, perhaps the most recent being the mid-July incident involving a University of Cincinnati police officer. So Mega Training Systems supplies both simulation and live fire training. So what are the advantages of each?
First of all, with virtual, what virtual will do, it allows the recreation of an environment where the officer is forced to make a split-second decision, you know, in a non-lethal training area that he would have to make in a potentially lethal escalated situation out in the field. One of the things that simulation will do for you is it gives the student or it gives an instructor the opportunity to not as much see how a student reacts, but why that person responded in the manner that they did. And it gives them an opportunity to explain what their decisions were. In terms of live fire, it gives you the opportunity, the actual management of recoil, which is one of the principles of marksmanship. We can recreate recoil in the simulated world and mimic the actions of a live fire weapon, but we can't mimic that explosion at the end of the muzzle, and that's something that has to be managed in the live fire world, and simulation cannot replace that.
And how have advances in virtual reality technology, especially recent years, how have those enhanced simulation training for law enforcement?
Well, just the technology has really, really kind of changed the ball game. We're using the same gaming engines that you would see in a Madden game or EA Sports might use in their game packages. So it is bringing more realism. It is giving the opportunity to be more flexible. You have an induction of sound and immersion technology. You have what's called a hostile fire return system where the instructor can actually strike the student with a projectile if he's not, you know, following the rules of good cover and concealment. It also allows departments to build a system based on their budget. So if a smaller department, they can get a system that they can train adequately with. If there's a larger, more apartment with a larger budget, now they can build that same system to match what their needs may be because they're more sophisticated and more advanced. So technology has really been helpful, to say the least, in the simulation world.
And I want to talk about that budgetary aspect in a minute, but can you provide an example of what an actual threat scenario might look like?
Well, what one of the things you need, just for example, the first thing that jumps out at you, traffic stops. That's been in the news recently. You can actually go out and with the Mega Training Systems simulator, it has an internal authoring system, which means you as a customer can actually go out, videotape, film your own scenarios in your own environment, whatever the threat du jour may be, whatever is hot in the world of law enforcement right then, you can go out and recreate that scenario and put it on your system. You know, for a car stop, you can make it a compliance stop. You can have the instructor use the branching software, which means you can change the outcome of the scenario to follow what the student is actually doing. So you can increase, you know, the aggression between the two parties. You can decrease it, or you could just make it into a lose-lose situation.
And how often, on average, do police officers train for potential use of force situations?
Well, it varies. Obviously, the larger departments, they train more often than the smaller departments. The unfortunate thing here, and in reality, is that training is usually the first head to roll under budgetary constraints. And everybody knows now today the budget is very tight, and for some reason, unfortunately, in my experience, the first thing that goes is training. So it varies from department to department. Obviously, the bigger, the more established metropolitan urban centers, they'll get more training.
And do they fund that training just through local operating budgets, which I presume are tied to tax revenue, or is there some sort of external grant system in play as well?
Again, the larger departments have a larger budget, so a lot of their training is done through their local operating budgets. However, Department of Homeland Security, they provide grants for specifically and especially for our departments that are located in some of the terrorist target areas, such as Washington, D.C. or New York. But Mega Training Systems has a program for small and medium-sized departments, which we will provide them with grant assistance, grant research, consulting, and would actually review the application for our grant before it's submitted. So we make sure all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, so it won't be any delays once they submit the grant. And Mega Training Systems provides that to customers free of charge.
And do you see a variation? We've obviously talked a lot about the U.S., and certainly that's what's been in the news, but looking internationally, do you see a difference between domestic and international customers for both the live fire and virtual simulation training aspects of your business?
The live fire is very similar. Mainly the international ranges are metric. They use meters for measuring their shooting distances and things like that. So there's some small differences in the size of their ranges, but generally their equipment is pretty much the same. The simulation side of the house, our language translation packages become very important because they may want that in their own native tongue, and they may want scenarios that are actually focused on their geographical area so they can see common backgrounds and things that are common to what they do every day. So that's the big difference is the location in the scenarios and the translation in the language.
In light of incidents, including the one we talked about earlier from mid-July, are you seeing a change in customer needs in light of these high-profile incidents? Are you hearing different things, or are you hearing more often from your customers or from prospects?
The main thing we're getting now is that the customers are really looking for adaptable platforms. Some of the simulation products that you may get is pretty fixed. You can't add new scenarios. You can't film your own scenarios. It's pretty fixed in what you can do in terms of training. But what our system does, it allows the customer to conform our system to their training needs, so it's you can constantly expand it, and it's adaptable enough to meet whatever training needs they have to be on plate for any given day. So they're really, really looking for an adaptable platform.
You know, when I think about training, I think about the shortened decision-making cycle that comes with being in law enforcement. And, you know, that's not just a challenge for them, but it happens in journalism, too. And this podcast originates from the National Press Club. Has real-time news coverage, especially of high-profile incidents in recent months and years, has that impacted how police departments and others approach you about training? I mean, does journalism, in effect, help drive the business that Meggett sees?
Sure, it does. For example, body cams. That's the really new item that's going to be hitting the market here pretty soon. And more than, at some point, it would shock me if every sworn police officer in the country is not wearing some type of body recorder. And we're already being tasked and asked if there's a way to integrate the body camera into the simulation world, so they can get immediate feedback not only from our replay but from their body cams. So it's already being tasked. We're being tasked with providing input in that area, and then you have newer and the less than lethal world part of policing, where you're dealing with electrics, less than lethal weapons such as tasers and things like that. And whenever there's a new model, then now you have to adjust to what's the latest on the street. So those things are being done also.
When you talk about body cams, obviously we're talking about video, and that brings up the whole topic of, you know, citizen journalists. They have smartphones and other devices that are video enabled. You know, how does the greater presence of bystanders who can report in real time, just like professional journalists can, how does that impact the training curriculum that law enforcement might go through?
I think it should impact it greatly. I mean, it's something that should have been taught or should be instilled anyway. But I think every training room should have a big banner over that says it's all on tape. Because I mean, it would be incredible for anybody to think that they're doing something that's not being recorded, because everybody has that capability now. Not only are they going to have their own body recorder, but it's going to be somebody that's not only seeing it, they're going to be recording it. You know, my dad always said, hey, you know, if it's not what you do when somebody's watching, it's what you do when somebody's not watching. So the idea is to be professional, do your best. Everybody makes mistakes, but as long as you're trying to do exactly what you've been trained and what you're supposed to do every single time, regardless of whether the limelight is on you or not, is what everybody should be thinking of. You know, I talked about it earlier. It's a lot of times it's not how you did something or how you reacted. It's why you did something a certain way, and being able to articulate why you did that is what's going to be really, really important in terms of training as we move forward.
Gary, thanks so much for your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Gary Harris is with Meggett Training Systems. You can learn more at meggetttrainingsystems.com. I'm Adam Cano. Thanks again for listening to Update One.
You have been listening to Update One, a production of the National Press Club's Broadcast Committee. You can comment on this show or any episode of Update One by going to facebook.com/PressClubDC or on Twitter @PressClubDC. Thanks for listening to Update One.